You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the FWA podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio, joined by Tom Hopkinson, the football reporter for the Sunday People, is on the line this weekend to have a look at the action that's televised. First of all, good afternoon to you, Tom.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I enjoyed the football on Tuesday and Wednesday, obviously recording this on Thursday afternoon. We've still got the Europa League to come this evening. Some incredible results in Europe over Tuesday and Wednesday. And Leicester's win at Club Brugge by 3-0. I think many expected Leicester to go there and beat Club Brugge, who haven't started their league season well, but the manner of the result was impressive.
Yeah, it really was. I had an interesting choice last night, Dave, sitting down in front of the telly deciding which game to pick. I think for any of the purists, for any fans or people who support none of those three teams, the one to sit down and watch was Leicester, wasn't it? And, you know, I did fear for them when there was the moment very early in the game when Bruges went through and carved out a really good opportunity, which went begging. But for Mark Albrighton to then score and Mahrez with his two goals, the second one, which was absolutely fantastic. It just shows, you know, Mahrez was clicking back into gear, but that for me was a real sign that Leicester, as you would hope they would and as you would expect them to, are really prioritising the Champions League this season over the Premier League. Look, we all know they're not going to win the Premier League 2 years on the bounce. It'll be brilliant if they win it again in the next decade, but I think it was great to see them go out and do so well and put in a performance like that in the Champions League.
It wasn't all good news for the UK sides though, Tom. Celtic were thumped at the Nou Camp by Barcelona 7-0. I'm not sure what it would take for Brendan Rodgers to become embarrassed, Tom, because yet again, not embarrassed by that result. Obviously, everyone thought they were going to go there and lose. It's just the fact that they got seven knocked past them that I think upset some of the Celtic fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? I can sort of understand Brendan Rodgers. You know, he's obviously, he can't, you know, he's not going to lay into his players after a defeat like that. I wouldn't expect him to anyway. Purely because the chasm between Celtic and Barcelona, and you know, the amount of wages that they've got to offer players, the amount of money that they've got to spend on transfers, you know, those sort of results unfortunately really seem to show the state of Scottish football at the moment. They're so far behind Europe's other big guns, you know, through no fault of their own. I look at that purely through revenue streams, and it was a real kick in the teeth for Celtic fans. I do understand Brendan's position on that, though. I mean, I would say better teams than Celtic, and I say that with the greatest of respect, better teams than Celtic will be absolutely put to the sword by Barcelona and that front three that they've got. But the problem is once you start getting to sixes and sevens, it does become embarrassing no matter the opponents.
Let's get stuck into the weekend's action then, Tom, and we start on Friday night at Stamford Bridge with Chelsea versus Liverpool. Chelsea 6-5, the draw 5-2, Liverpool in the betting at 9-4. Tom, I know there have been some protests, mild-mannered protests, about these Friday night fixtures, but as an armchair fan, I absolutely love them. I can't wait to see Premier League football on a Friday night, and we've got a real belter here.
We have, yeah. I went to the first Friday night Premier League fixture last season when Aston Villa entertained Manchester United. I didn't like it, I have to say, or didn't like the idea of it, the premise of it, because it means an extra night working for me. But I have to say, really, it really does, you know, that whole nighttime atmosphere, it just adds to the spice of it all. I'm thoroughly looking forward to Chelsea versus Liverpool. It's the first of two games I'll be at over the weekend. Leicester and Burnley, the second of those on Saturday. But fascinating subplots all around this Chelsea-Liverpool game, not least the battle between Conte and Jurgen Klopp. I mean, we saw last Saturday, didn't we, the first It was almost the first meeting of the Premier League's managerial godfathers. And if you like, we've got another one tomorrow night. So it'll be absolutely fascinating to see who comes out on top. I would edge just towards Chelsea because I think home advantage. And I just think that key battle in the middle of midfield, I think N'Golo Kante will have what it takes to give them the edge there.
Do you think Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, or do you think Jurgen Klopp will set his Liverpool side up like he usually does, where they're kind of eyeballs out from minute one, aren't they, pressurising the ball? Can they do that against Chelsea?
So that's why I chuckle. I think that's the way Jurgen Klopp sets his side up against any team, isn't it? A bit like Arsene Wenger, it doesn't matter who the opposition is, he's going to play the way that he sees fit. I think they can do that against Chelsea. I mean, you know, you only have to cast your mind back to last season. They had a couple of great results against the bigger sides, and then perhaps fell by the wayside against sides that you would expect them to beat. I mean, I think it'll be a rip-roaring tie. There's obviously history between these two sides as well, going back to the Champions League days between Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho. So I don't see why he can't set his side up that way on the front foot. And I think it'll give Chelsea, particularly David Luiz, who has been named in the starting lineup. We've been told Conte said that he's going to start, obviously with John Terry being out. I think they'll be looking to really ruffle his feathers in his first return. So that could be one area that they've identified to try to get at Chelsea. But as I say, I just think man for man across the park, I just think Chelsea have the edge. But the caveat to that is that Liverpool looked superb last weekend, didn't they, in that first match in front of the new stand at Anfield. And they will be buoyed by that and hoping to build on that victory.
Do you think Daniel Sturridge will start again?
I think he has to, yeah. I mean, I know he was frustrated that he didn't score last week, but I just think he holds the ball up so well, and the runs he makes through the middle, I really do think that creates space for other players around him. So I would expect him to, of course, former Chelsea player, so Klopp might just look at that and you know, give him a little pull to one side in the dressing room before he sends them out and say, you know, go out there and go and show them what they were missing, what they let go. He's been there before, of course, but whenever you go back to your old employees, you want to show them what they lost.
Daniel Sturridge might need firing up. I don't think Diego Costa will, Tom. Lives life on the edge, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I mean, we spoke to Antonio Conte last week, last Friday, about Diego Costa. And what was fascinating was the fact that Jose Mourinho, he defended him to the hilt. You know, he always used to say, look, this is the way Diego is. I don't want to take that fire out of his belly. And he almost encouraged him to live life on the edge. He was, you know, cut very much from the same cloth as Mourinho. Now, Conte, you would expect, given what we know of him as a player, what we knew of him as a player, and what we've seen from him in the technical area, you would have sort of imagined he would say, you know, exactly the same thing, go out, keep doing what you do. But what he did say was that he had pulled Diego Costa to one side and told him, look, I'd rather have you on the pitch scoring goals for us, and you know, you've just got to channel your aggression the right way. But he'll be a handful for Liverpool's defence tomorrow night, make no mistake about that. He looks back to the sort of form that he was in the year Chelsea won the title a couple of seasons ago.
What's the prediction then, scoreline?
I'm going to go for a 2-1. I do imagine Daniel Sturridge to be on the score sheet for Liverpool, but I just think Chelsea will nick it. And that other man we mentioned, Costa, I would see him in the goal as well, or in the goal, should I say.
Yeah, Diego Costa to score and Chelsea to win. I was 9-4 here with William Hill. It's 3-1 now, enhanced odds. Chelsea to win the match 6-5, the draw 5-2, Liverpool 9-4. And if you fancy Chelsea to win 2-1, that's available at 8-1. Here with William Hill. Everton versus Middlesbrough is the tea time kickoff on Saturday, 5:30. Everton 3-4 to win this game, Tom. The draw 13-5, Middlesbrough 15-4. Enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Everton to win was 13-8. That's been boosted to 9-4. And Alvaro Negredo to score and Middlesbrough to win was 15-2. It's now 8-1. Outstanding performance from Everton in the second half on Monday night against Sunderland. I look at this Everton side now, that starting 11, and it looks fantastic man for man. Idrissa Gueye started the season incredibly well. They've got Yannick Bolasie, who gives them X factor, and when he's on, they've got a natural finisher and goal scorer in Lukaku. I think they're pretty strong, strong defensively as well. Ashley Williams coming in to partner Phil Jagielka, and Ramirez, Funes Mori not getting a game at the moment. So they look good in every department at the moment, Everton.
They really do, Dave. Yeah, I mean, the four players that you mentioned there, I mean, Ashley Williams, a fantastic signing. Balassi as well. I think under Koeman, I think they'll really work on that final delivery. He could be, you know, he lacked a little bit of consistency with that final ball when he was at Crystal Palace. But on any given day, he can absolutely tear defences apart. So, yeah, two very good signings there. Lukaku as well, of course, back in the goals again on Monday against Sunderland. So I think when he's fit and firing, he just as importantly got his confidence out there. There are a few better strikers in the league than him. But I think the one person you didn't mention who is always impressive for me, and whether he's playing week in, week out, or whether he's just around the dressing room, is Gareth Barry. I mean, his statistics last season were up there with some of the best of his career. And, you know, he is a massive boost for Everton that they're still getting performances out of him. I mean, he's no spring chicken these days, is he? But you know, I think the whole squad as well has really bought into Ronald Koeman. When you speak to one or two people around the club, they say it's a very different atmosphere and environment at Finch Farm this season than it was under Roberto Martinez. Koeman's been there as a player, and he doesn't need to befriend the players. You know, he tells it how it is, and I think they've really galvanised themselves from that.
I love the fact that he pulled off Ross Barkley at half-time as well. Not the fact that it was Ross Barkley, because obviously he's one of England's most talented players, but wasn't performing, not afraid to make those big decisions early on in a football match at half-time in that match, and obviously isn't a protector of reputations. He's not bothered, is he, Ronald Koeman? He'll just make the right decision.
No, as I say, you know, and I think players respect that, especially when it comes from a manager who, as a, you know, he's been there. He knows the emotions you're going through. He won everything as a player, decorated with Barcelona, and of course, you know, played with Holland at the highest level. And I think players buy into that. I think Ross Barkley, you know, it's no secret now, is it, that Ross Barkley hasn't trained on as we perhaps imagined he would. I know he's certainly better than he was a couple of seasons ago, but I think that there's still a rawness about him, and I think it's good from an England supporter's point of view that Ronald Koeman is going to show him that, you know, you might have been the sort of bright young thing around these parts for the last few years, but that's going to count for nothing with me unless you actually start tightening up the areas of the game that you know, are evident that they need tightening up. So I think Ross Barkley, you know, he may have felt a little bit undercut by the manager being hooked at halftime. We saw it with Neil Taylor, didn't we, down at Swansea. He got pulled off even earlier. But you know, I think given the stage of development that Ross Barkley's at, you know, I'm hoping that he buys into what Koeman tells him and realizes that, you know, that it might just be the kick up the backside that he needs.
And Everton odds on to beat Middlesbrough at the weekend. Do you think that's right, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. I think given the performance against Sunderland, they were superb. I don't think it'll be as easy for them against Middlesbrough as it was against Sunderland. I think they've got a very good squad. Ita Karanka has put together some excellent signings up there. I mean, I think Valdez and Negredo, who you mentioned earlier, I think they are excellent signings. You know, they've been there and done it. They've got Premier League experience as well. So they will be great additions to the Borough ranks. But I still think Everton, I think, will win by a couple of goals.
Everton -1 in the market, so Everton to win by two or more goals in the game, 9-5 here with William Hill. Let's have a look at Watford versus Manchester United. This game at midday on Sunday. Watford are 5-1 to win the match. The draw 3-1 with Manchester United in the market at 11-20. Recording this before Manchester United's trip to Feyenoord on Thursday night, we're going to see a completely different team, though, Tom, to the one that's going to, I think, take the field on Thursday night in Holland. But they've still got to get over that Manchester derby defeat. And it was quite humbling, wasn't it, really? Because went into that game flying Manchester, both sides did, but Manchester United will have expected to at least pick up a point in that match. And the way they were dominated in that first half by the City side, a rude awakening for Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, it was. I was at the game at Old Trafford. I mean, it was a great game to be at, a great game to be reporting on. And you're absolutely right. For the first 35 minutes, 40 minutes or so, City were sublime. They were a different level. But that said, you know, I know Mkhitaryan and Lingard were taken off at half-time, and a lot was made because Mourinho, he didn't name them, but made it abundantly clear that he would have taken them off earlier in the game if he'd felt it wouldn't have really hammered their confidence. But I thought in the second half there were one or two positives from United, and Ibrahimovic, although he scored an absolute cracker against City, I thought he could have had at least a couple more chances. At least a couple more goals. Maybe certainly one more goal. Anyway, he certainly had the chances for that. There was the penalty shout as well. You know, I have to say at the time, I wasn't on first viewing. I wasn't absolutely convinced when Bravo brought Rooney down that that was a penalty. But when you see the replays, I don't think there can be too many arguments about it. And so, you know, I don't think it was probably as chastening for United as perhaps we'd think. But I think tonight's trip to Feyenoord, even though, as you say, the personnel is going to be different, Wayne Rooney, of course, left at home and rested, it's still, it's almost this mindset, isn't it, when you've played in the Europa League on a Thursday night, that there's that it is problematic to get yourself up and firing again on a Sunday, and particularly when it's a noon kickoff on a Sunday. So it doesn't give United's staff too much time to turn around. And of course Watford themselves buoyed by an unbelievable comeback victory last week with a couple of fantastic goals. So yeah, it'll be a good game, this one.
Were you surprised by Jose Mourinho's comments at the end of that match that he so publicly admonished his players, because that's what cost him his job at Chelsea to a certain extent?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I was surprised. I mean, look, he'd substituted. It was obvious to everyone in the stadium that the two players, Mkhitaryan and Lingard, were not having good games. And for Manchester United to come out in the second half with Ander Herrera and Marcus Rashford in their place, you know, he told you everything you needed to know, that Mourinho, just like the other 75,000 odd of us, completely agreed. Now, what was interesting was the fact that He was asked a direct question about whether it looked after 20 minutes or so, whether he would he would have needed to substitute them then. And he said, look, I didn't want to do it because it would have killed them. Now, I thought that was a little bit strange, because he then went on, again, I reiterate, he didn't actually name names, but we all knew who he was talking about. He went on to say that their performances weren't acceptable. And I think when you take players off at halftime, it's you know, it's pretty damaging to them as well then. So I was a little bit surprised that he perhaps didn't say, do you know what, after 20 minutes, this just isn't working. I think maybe it was a sign of perhaps maturity, and perhaps in the back of his mind, you know, everything that went on at Chelsea. Because I think, am I right in saying that Joe Cole was taken off a few years ago in Mourinho's first spell at the club the first half? Yeah, and, you know, but perhaps for the greater good of Manchester United, he would have been better making the change and then having to spend the week putting his arm around Mkhitaryan and Lingard and letting it drag on till half-time.
And in this match, they go to Watford, who will have been delighted with their performance against West Ham, coming from two goals down in that game at the London Stadium to win by 4-2, and Troy Deeney and Odion Ighalo both scoring in that game. When those two get going, they kind of complement each other as well. Tom, so interesting match for Manchester United, this one. Watford will have their tails up after last weekend.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy one. And I think if, well, the fact Walter Mazzarazzi will have done his research this week, and, you know, he will have watched the tape from the United City game, and he will have shown it to Troy Deeney and Odion Ighalo and said, look, you know, David is there to be bullied. I mean, Eric Bailly has been a superb signing for Manchester United, and he's performed very well this season. Was like a statue last weekend in the Manchester Derby, and I think he will tell that pair to get up and get at him. And if there is a strike partnership in the Premier League who really, you know, will take bullying defenders into their own hands and really enjoy it, then I think it's those two. You only had to look at, or listen to, should I say, Troy Deeney's comments after the West Ham game, when they felt slighted by the fact that Payet had produced the Rabona cross for Mikel Antonio's second goal, and one or two other things that were going on at the park. That, you know, when they got into the dressing room at half time, they shook a few heads together, and everything got sorted out. So, yeah, it'd be a very interesting game. I've got a sneaky suspicion this one's going to end up in a draw.
Yeah, I can see that as well. Watford to draw with Manchester United, 3-1 here with William Hill. Crystal Palace versus Stoke is a 2:15 kickoff that's televised. And Crystal Palace are 19-20 to win this game. The draw 9-4. Stoke in the betting at 16-5. Palace have picked up 4 points from their opening four games and won last weekend. Stoke have just got one from their opening four. Worst start to their Premier League season ever. Are there serious problems at Stoke, or do you think it's just a case of them starting slowly, which they do traditionally anyway, in recent history anyway?
Yeah, they have done. I mean, look, I think it's a fantastic club, Stoke. It's got superb infrastructure, and I think in Mark Hughes they have a very, very talented manager. So I do totally believe that it is just a slow start and that they'll turn it around. What I love about the way Stoke have gone about their business over the years is, you know, they've always added just two or three players to the squad, just strengthened it slightly every summer, just tweaked it here and there. And I think it's been a lesson to every promoted club in how to do that. So I have absolutely no fears that Stoke will finish mid-table this season. I did actually tip them to be one of the surprise packages and perhaps be pushing for a Europa League spot. But you do wonder, even at this early stage, whether they might just not quite have done enough or got off to a good enough start to be that high. But I'd have every faith in Mark Hughes. I mean, it'll be an interesting game, though. A tough game for them with Christian Benteke now off the mark at Palace. I think he's a great signing. They've got Kabayi back now as well, haven't they, from his prolonged holiday given the Euros. So it should be another good game, and I think Palace will have enough to beat Stoke, seeing as it's at Selhurst Park.
Crystal Palace 19-20 to win that game, and the weekend finishes with Tottenham. They are hosting Sunderland at White Hart Lane. Tottenham 3-10 to win the match. The draw 4-1 with Sunderland in the betting at 10-1. The enhanced odds here, Tom. Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win was odds on at 10-11, now 6-5. And Jermaine Defoe to score and Sunderland to win was 14-1. That's been enhanced to 20s. And I think I'm right in saying Defoe scored in six successive Premier League away games now. For Sunderland. Tottenham really short price to win this match. This match comes on the back of that loss midweek against Monaco, though, at Wembley, which might have unsettled them slightly.
Yeah, it probably unsettled them slightly, but still not enough for them to lose against Sunderland, Dave, I don't think. I mean, Jermaine Defoe in a very good vein of goal-scoring form, but I still think Spurs will have more than enough to be able to deal with them. They've had a good start to the season, that midweek performance aside, and I think they had the chances certainly to beat Monaco from the highlights packages that I saw of the game, but just didn't take them. And, you know, you can put that down to several things, whether it's because of their first return to the Champions League for 5 or 6 years, or whether it's because they're playing away from White Hart Lane. But I think they'll grow into Wembley Stadium as the Champions League group phase goes on. They're going to need to, but I think they'll be able to do that. And perhaps when the second game comes around, it'll be a little bit more familiar for them. But I just don't see Sunderland having anywhere near enough in them to give Tottenham the sort of game that we'll see Sunderland get anything from it. And I think if I was going to stick a few quid on anything around this game, I think it'd be a heavy, heavy defeat for Sunderland. I think we'd be talking fours or fives, maybe.
Tottenham to win 4-0, 11-1. Tottenham to win 5-0, 25-1. Are things as bad as they seem with Sunderland then, in your opinion, Tom?
No, I mean, look, I think it's very early in the season to say that things are really bad. But I just think there's a mindset around the football club at the moment. They've struggled year after year, haven't they? And, I think a lot of supporters that I've spoken to and you know, when you speak to people again who are in around the club, it's almost this mindset that you're going to games and you know it's, or you're going to season, sorry, knowing that you're going to have a real battle on your hands. I mean, David Moyes didn't make any secret of the fact that he didn't feel he'd done the business that he wanted to do in the transfer window. Yes, he brought in Victor Anachibi, but is he really the answer to their problems? I know Barini will be back in a couple of months, but again, you know, I talked about starts to the seasons, and it might just be the case that if Sunderland don't get enough points on the board in the first 8 weeks, that they're going to be really struggling and being in around that drop zone again, and face another real hard battle for 8 or 9 months. I think obviously there's a positive there that Lamina Kone has signed a new 5-year deal as well. But the flip side of that is that, you know, he was desperate to leave the club only 4 or 5 weeks ago. So, you know, how much commitment does he actually have for Sunderland?
It's always dangerous when a player signs a new contract, isn't it, for an extended period, how they're going to perform in the short term, because they know they're on that deal. They're on the gravy train to a certain extent, Tom. So if they're not happy at the club, is there an incentive for them to perform, I suppose, some of the players?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, he made no secret of the fact that he wanted to join Everton. I think the transfer request was handed in, wasn't it? So, you know, when a player is like that, I mean, look at the season John Stones had last year off the boil, having had the whole transfer merry-go-round in the summer where he had a request rejected as well by Everton. I just think it's really difficult to flip from the mindset where you've made your mind up that you want to leave to then all of a sudden switch back on and be fully focused on the task at hand. And when you're a central defender at Sunderland, you know, you're going to be the centre of attention a lot of the season, and that would worry me if I was a supporter at the Stadium of Light.
Tom, thank you for your company on the FWA podcast. You can follow
Pleasure.
Tom.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow Tom on Twitter at TomHop_people. You can follow myself at D Kellner. Have an enjoyable trip to the King Power Stadium on Saturday, and enjoy that one at Stamford Bridge on Friday night as well, Tom. And we'll hopefully catch up later on in the season.
Will do. All the best, Dave. Thanks a lot.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill. Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with 4 or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.